I'm Josh Cooperman, and this is Convo by Design. Today, we're heading to San Francisco. We're speaking with Katie McCaffrey with the McCaffrey Design Group about functional beauty, designing in a rapidly changing city like San Francisco, and so much more. It's really astounding when you stop and think about it. A city like San Francisco, the Bay Area, that is under constant change, social change, climate change, political change, safety concerns, property management and development issues. How can the design community stay on track for their clients and manage all of the changes simultaneously? Can't be easy. But Katie seems to take it all with a certain grace and poise. Incredibly so, actually. And you're going to hear all about that right after this. I am so proud of my partnership with Thermasol. They have been presenting partners of Convo by Design for 4+ years, and there is a certain amount of pride that comes with saying that the show is presented by the company that is the absolute best in the world at what they do. Thermasol engineers the most exceptional smart shower products and steam shower systems worldwide for a few reasons. They were the first company to design and patent the technology here in the U.S. dating back to 1958. Thermasol, a U.S.-based manufacturer in Round Rock, Texas, employs an engineering team that designs, tests, and continuously refines the product. Their quality control team tests every single steam generator before it departs the factory. Who else does that? Nobody. I have the pleasure of working with some world-class designers and architects who tell me, and you know this, that the idea of luxury has changed, especially when clients want a spa-like bathroom. Steam is mandatory, or it's just not considered luxury. If you want to add steam, you have really one true option if you want the best, and that's Thermasol. Mitch Altman, third-generation CEO of this family-owned company, of 65 years, continues to innovate the bathroom and shower space through technological marvels such as intelligent showering systems, sound therapy, aromatherapy, chromotherapy, technical interfaces, and so much more. And now, Thermasol, the industry leader in steam bath equipment and technology since 1958, is enhancing its already stellar family of products with the new indoor and outdoor luxury saunas. Available in 3 design configurations, each sauna is handcrafted from clear Western red cedar or Nordic spruce, inspired by the brilliance of Northern European sauna technology and design. Thermasol's latest collections offer luxurious features, and there's only one option if you want the finest experience, Thermasol. Check out thermasol.com and at Thermasol on the
socials. I feel like I always say this, and so the question may get old, but the answer never does, is I love the origin story. I love learning how creatives wound up where they wound up. How'd you wind up where you wound up?
Oh, it's a long story, but...
Oh, good. Perfect. We got an hour.
Okay, good. It's good because it is a bit of an indirect story. It's not the typical, like, I went and studied interior design and I think that's important, I think, for other people who really love interior design and want to get into it. So I'll get right into it. So I started out, originally, I had a big passion for interior design. I also had a big passion for furniture design. So when I went to college, my thoughts were that I would study interior design, or study industrial design, pardon me. So I started in industrial design, but it was taught much more like an engineering course, very heavy on the engineering, very heavy on the math, which is not my forte. So I ended up switching to interior and to graphic design, got my major in graphic design because I was also interested in advertising at the time. So all these wonderful, you know, creative possible careers were floating around in my head, and I loved all of them. So I could have seen myself happily go in any which direction. So studied graphic design, worked in advertising for a little bit, just out of college, but still really loved interior design and furniture design. And I felt like it was much more well-suited for me. I had done an internship with a San Francisco interior designer, Rebecca Bradley, one summer, and she was such a wonderful mentor. And it still spoke to me, whereas the other graphic design advertising, I knew I was going to be spending a lot of time behind the computer, which isn't terrible. But at the same time, I loved the diversity of interior design. So I approached Rebecca Bradley again and decided to do a bit of a career switch. So started working for Rebecca as a junior, and just worked my way up designing furniture for her, lighting, and doing a lot of drawings. And then I worked for a furniture company for a while, Rossi Antiques. They're a great antique restorer. And they also made beautiful custom furniture and antique reproductions. So I managed their reproduction and custom department for a few years. And there I got to design furniture quite a bit. So there I thought it was kind of funny. It was for a full circle, sort of an indirect way of getting back to my original thoughts of being back in interior design and furniture design. So that was kind of a little moment of joy of like, look, I still got here, just a little bit more of an indirect route. And when I worked at Rossi Antiques, the furniture, I got to know a ton of local designers. And one of my favorite designers to work with was Martha Angus. And we did lots of projects together. And so when it came time to make the move, she offered me a job and I took it and I worked for her for about 14 years and became her design director. And later we partnered, and long story short, now the company is mine and that's where we are.
What an interesting transition. You know, I don't hear of that very often. There's one story that I know of that, having interviewed Bunny Williams and her starting off with Parrish Hadley and then starting her own firm. And she grew from within as well, where the woman who runs the company now actually started as an intern. Not that you started as an intern, but I think it's interesting where you start with somebody, you work with them for 14 years. And then look, you've got and this comes up in design all the time. You've got a logical choice, right? You stay doing what you're doing. And I don't really want to call it settling, because some people are happy not being the boss and doing what they're doing. Others are super driven where they feel like it's what they need to do or what they're supposed to do. So they go start their own firm or partner with somebody else. But it's interesting. I don't often hear like you rise up and then at some point you become partners with the person that hired you as a junior designer or a new designer to the company. What does that transition look like? And because I'm curious, because I don't hear about that often, what are the trappings?
So I think that it really says a lot, I think, about your employer, the particular boss that I had. You know, Martha was a really great mentor, and really let her designers grow and evolve. It was very, very noticeable. And everybody always enjoyed the amount of independence that she gave us. So I think that was really a huge part of just wanting to stay. She was kind, giving, and really just, it was just a really great team to work for. So to me, there was no real desire to move on or start my own firm right away. I always, factored in the amount of learning that takes place in a firm with multiple people and a place that's really well established. There's so much that you learn every day in this industry, and especially with firms, if you have a good leader, if you have a good mentor, there's some really wonderful reasons to not move right away. Now, again, it really matters if it's a happy workplace. There are some big personalities out there where, workplaces can be a little bit stressful. So this wasn't the case. And so I was really lucky in that regard. And when the timing came right and Martha wanted to ease into retirement, it worked out really well. So I was very grateful at the powers that be that it worked out that way.
What did, and it's really interesting because after 14 years, you find yourself with your fingerprints pretty much all over the firm, all over the company anyway. But what changed for you when it became your firm?
So much. The roles that you have to play when you move from someone who is not the boss, you know, just to actually being the one that's steering the ship is really, it's quite a different change. You have to actually step a little bit away from the project management part. You need to have a team that supports that element. And so, being that the project management was something I really enjoyed doing, it was hard to pull away from that because there was a bigger project to manage and that was my business. So it was quite a change for me, at least. I think some people it's more natural for them than others. But to me, it was, I felt almost a little bit of guilt, stepping away from, the project management. Like I should still be there managing every iota of detail on this project, but you just can't when you run a business. You have to spread yourself evenly from client to client and project to project and really rely on your team and your senior designers to do that project management. So it's a very different change of pace. And also it's wonderful and interesting and challenging. But it's definitely different for a creative type person to start your own business and become the boss.
What did you have to do? This is, and it seems like a pedestrian question, and trust me, it's really not. What did you have to do to mentally flip that switch? Because it's really interesting. Many of the creatives that I have spoken to over the years are type A, control freak, not in a negative sense, but like being a control freak is what it is. Like you have to be in control or you get this angst, this anxious feeling. I get the feeling like you probably have had that a little bit too. Did you start off with that? Were you able to transition away from that or do you still have that?
You know, I have a little bit of it. I don't actually feel like I'm type A about certain things and then other things I'm not type A. So what I really take sort of a collaborative approach to running my business. I just make sure I hire the right people that I can trust and that I know are going to pitch in and really work as a team. So I'm sort of more of like, I really love the team atmosphere of, where I'm not necessarily the leader, we're all collaborating in this amazing company and making great things together. That's sort of my approach. So I try not to be super controlling or have any angst with regards to keeping things on control. I feel like if I lean on my team and hire the right people, we can all collaborate and do what we do best. And in that way, everybody's happy and productive. They love what they're doing and really feeling like they're making a difference in the company rather than just following the leader. So that's how it works in our office. And I rather enjoy it.
Even still, how many designers do you have working
we
for
have
you?
Five.
You have five.
So small team.
Small team. And how has the, this is a bit on the technical side, but I am a huge fan of the technical side of the business because, and I find myself talking about the business of design because you have to talk about the design business in order to get to the ability to do the creative work. You just have to, and it's changed so much. This is not a design business podcast. I love the stories and often how people run and operate the business tells a lot about who they are as a creative, which is really interesting. And we're going to talk about your work, which is one of the things that I absolutely love doing most about this is finding out about the person and then looking at the work and then comparing and contrasting the two, because it's really, if you, it's anthropological. If you look at it, it's really, really amazing. This isn't about design style, but it's about how you do what you do. And I'm curious, not about your personal style or an aesthetic that you love, but more to the point of, because design is changing so rapidly and has changed so rapidly, how do you inject your own creativity while still representing and honoring client needs, client desires?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I think it's super important to do exactly that. Really listen to your clients, read who they are, how they want their life to function, how they want their home to reflect them and their lifestyle. So it's got to work functionally. It's also got to feel like home to them. And that can vary from client to client. Do they want, to have your signature style, or do they want something that truly reflects them? And usually it's a combination of both. So I think the collaboration with the clients is so huge and so important. The house has to feel comfortable to them. And in order for it to feel comfortable to them, it has to have that element where it feels like a representation of who they are and feel familiar and comfortable, but still being the best version of that it can be, and still surprising them by elevating that, doing something that they maybe never would have thought of. And that's where we come in and take our communication that we've had with them and meld it into, a wonderful pastry dough, let's say. And then, voila, out of the oven comes something that's totally blows them away, makes them super happy, but yet still has that comforting, slight familiarity where they can really say, this is my home. This, invite their friends over and really feel that it reflects them and their family, their needs, that it flows well, that everything is designed, like a glove to fit them. So I think that's really the key, is finding that happy medium of communicating with the client, reading them, listening to them, and then taking that and melding something really beautiful using our creative know-how, and getting it done in a wonderful and surprising way.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I asked the question because it's funny. So we're recording this on, what is the date today? The 5th, February 5th. And I am still on this every December, January, whatever the magazine is, whatever the magazine social media sites are, whatever the social assets are for any of the companies out there that generally talk about the media of design, the business of design or cover design. Here are the top 10 things that you're going to see in 2024. Here are the top 10 things that are being vanquished in 2024. Here's what you're going to see. Here's what you're not going to see. What's really funny about it is you'll look at the list and you'll see white kitchens are out, white kitchens are in. And by the way, it's all BS, because as long as there are clients that want a white kitchen, it's always going to be popular.
Exactly.
And as long as there are people that don't like white kitchens, they're going to tell their designer they don't want a white kitchen, which, by the way, is fine if you don't want a white kitchen. But to say that it's, it's out, and to put it, I've often said that, trends only become a negative when you add a Y to it, right? Mm-hmm. Trends are fine, but when they become trendy, then you have a problem, because designers, what is your design window? When you look at a project in your mind, how long do you expect that design to last?
We try to design projects so that they will last 20 years. It depends. A lot of it depends on the client, but as a general rule for kitchens and bathrooms where the materials are very expensive, there's a permanence to them, stone counters and tile backsplashes and shower surrounds, and all of those materials have such a permanence to them. You can't just swap them out really easily. So I always like to approach kitchens and bathrooms with a sense of timelessness. Let's build this thing to last. Unless the client wants us to follow a very particular trend, because they just have to have it, that's fine. We can do that. But generally speaking, I try to steer them away from things like that on materials that cost a lot and that have a lot of permanence that can't be swapped out. So, kitchens and baths to me, I really try to focus the clients away from trends there, focus on what they truly, truly want, what makes their heart spark with joy when they walk in the room, what type of kitchen, really is going to make them happy. Is it white or is it going to be dark and moody? Whatever it is, let's choose the materials so that they stand the test of time. So, that's rule number one. I think rule number two is for any of the other rooms where items can be swapped out. And if a client is really, just saw these rooms or these schemes on Pinterest and has to have it, we've encountered that a few times. And so it's just a matter of each individual moment of how the client is reacting to, say, the imagery that they're seeing, the trends that they're seeing, and what is that trend? Is it something that I do think will stand the test of time, or is it really just going to be like in and out? I hate to say it, I think that mauve, I've seen it be popular before, the dusty pink, it's all the rage. It's going to be out in a few years. But some clients have to have it. They really want it. So, and that's fine. It's, softer materials, that's fine. Will I do a bathroom in it? Probably not, unless the client's okay with swapping that out in a few years when that color has had its time and moved on. So, and it just depends. Maybe the client has a very specific connection to a particular color that happens to be trending. And that's fine too. That's important.
What is your philosophical approach to trends, lists, colors of the year? Here's what's in, what's out. How do you navigate that? Because you had mentioned the dusty pink, the dusty rose. And by the way, the color of the year, I rail against color of the year every year because for a couple of reasons. One, because I think there's six companies now, seven companies now that do color of the year. They're all different. You can't tell me that all seven of those colors are like, this is the it color. It's counterproductive and it's not helpful. The other part of that too is if you want to change, and from the paint company's perspective, totally get it. Like if I don't like the color of the room and I want to change to a dusty rose, awesome. You can totally do that. But if you're saying, well, now I've got to go buy a $20,000 sofa in that particular color, you're making a huge mistake, potentially, and an expensive one, because that may be something that you don't want to live with. Look at Santa Fe in the 90s. That Santa Fe aesthetic was like all the rage in Southern California. You can't
Totally.
find it anymore, and for very good reason, unless you're in Santa Fe.
Right,
Right?
exactly. Santa
What's
Fe, it makes all the sense in the world.
totally. What is your approach to the list, that concept?
I try not to pay too much attention to those. You can't help but not be aware of some of the trends. You just can't. Especially in this day and age where, there's digital media everywhere you look. It's on Instagram, it's on Pinterest, it's on Facebook. So you can't help but see it. And I think as any designer or any creative type would, whether you are aware of it or not, you are in some way, shape, or form influenced by the things that you see and the things that are around you. So it does happen. And again, I think it just all comes back to knowing what trends, you know, what trends do you like, getting in touch with why do you like those trends as a designer, first off, so that you really wrap your head around, you know, does this have longevity? If I do this for a client, am I giving them the best product for their investment? So I always try to think of what is going to be the best investment for my client. Are they putting their money to good use? And if they're going all in on a certain trend, I might caution them a little bit against that. Just, you know, as a safety precaution. But I think you just can't help, you know, anybody who says that they don't follow trends or they don't pay attention to trends, I think is joshing, because they just don't, you just can't help as a creative type to take in that visual stimulus and not be shaped by it in some way, shape or form. So that's kind of my thoughts on it. So I try not to totally focus on those lists, but as trends come and go and you see the visual media that's out there, you pay attention to it, you assess it, you decide if it's a trend that's worth following if you have a client that wants to do it. But I try not to get over influenced by them. So there's always a part of me that says, well, you know, take this trend with a grain of salt. It might not last. So there's, you know, there's just various things. It's a balance, I think.
You are listening to my conversation with the incredibly talented Katie McCaffrey. We'll be right back. Man, I love this. I have a new sponsor partner on the show that I want to introduce you to if you're not already familiar with them. If you are a specifying designer, architect, landscape architect, or savvy design enthusiast, if you have heard about the quiet luxury movement, this idea of crafting a lifestyle around understated elegance, simplicity, and sophistication, there's more to it than that. And I will add uncomplicated living. Isn't that what we all strive for? I am extremely happy. I'm really thrilled to share a company that embodies all of this, utilizing proprietary technology and a focus on sustainability in their stunningly beautiful products. It's TimberTech. TimberTech is the premium decking company delivering multi-tonal color blending and natural wood textures in a product that is virtually indistinguishable from a natural wood product. What does this mean? It means it's everything wood should be, a beautiful look that blends seamlessly with a well-designed space, providing years of enjoyment and performs the way you want it to. No splintering, fading, peeling, cracking, or rotting. I had a wood deck at our Manhattan Beach home, and I gotta tell you, it was exasperating every year doing the random board flip, taking out nails, resetting them, restaining them. It was a complete pain. It was complicated, and I didn't look forward to it. I wish I had TimberTech, because TimberTech is not only uncomplicated, it's beautiful. It comes in over 20 finish options and 9 collections, and 85% of the material is recycled. This is premium decking for your next project. Learn more and specify it for your next design project, TimberTech, on the socials or timbertech.com, where you can find a retailer near you, as well as a number of tools to create, design, order samples, and get the expert help you may need. TimberTech is uncomplicated luxury and performs. It's your choice for your next deck project. As a busy professional designer, you know how important it is to find the right partnerships. Partnerships that allow you to specify the right products for every project. Professionals like you don't just have time to sit around and waste, right? So let me tell you about one of my partnerships. Pacific Sales is here to serve you with expert, knowledgeable, and non-commissioned professionals to help you specify the right product for all your projects. Non-commissioned. That means their only incentive is your satisfaction. Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home, a Best Buy company, has just that, with over 60 years of service in Southern California. Pacific Sales is your destination for exploration, advice, and inspiration. And you will find all your favorite brands, like Monogram, and their commitment to providing exceptional products, starting with materials. Monogram sources commercial-grade stainless steel on their refrigerators, unscratchable sapphire glass on their cooktop knobs, durable marine-grade bearings on their dishwasher racks. Monogram takes inspiration from the leading-edge materials used in the high-end automotive and aeronautics industry to provide you with lasting beauty and exceptional quality. The beauty is backed by the same level of attention to performance, which is why Monogram appliances are trusted and sought after by chefs all over the country. Chain-driven French oven doors that can be opened with one hand, and an industry-exclusive hearth oven that allows for all-electric indoor brick oven-style cooking without the need for external ventilation. These are just a few of the things that make Monogram so special. Pacific Sales features Monogram appliances, and Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home team is here to help you and offer their Pro Rewards program, which is a trade program unlike any you have experienced before. And here's the cherry on top, access. Access to exclusive builder trade incentives from top brands like Monogram. Visit a Pacific Sales showroom today to learn how you can unlock additional savings and benefits. Don't miss out on the opportunity to work with the best of the best. Visit Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home today and elevate your projects to new heights. Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home, where excellence meets expertise. Yeah, no, I totally get it. And by the way, listen, I'm not a designer. I'm a journalist. So when I look at something like that, for me, there's put out all of the, take all of the trending ideas. Don't just make stuff up because you want to, and there's a lot of people that do that, but don't just make stuff up because you want to make stuff up. But if you take an idea, boucle, right? So I think it was Salone, not last year, but the year before, back from pandemic, everyone goes to Italy. And at Salone, it was just the amount of boucle that people saw was like, amazing. And then all of a sudden you start seeing it manifested in all of this design work, and you see it in the trades, and you see it in the, on online, and you see it everywhere. And it's like, wow, this is great. Now I've seen lists where people are saying, well, boucle is out. You know what? No, it's not. It's a wonderful fabric. It's super soft. It's cozy. It's comfy. There are people who have since fallen in love with boucle. To say it's out, that's just being, you know, counterintuitive. You're being counterproductive. You're being provocative. And to get clicks, totally get it, right? But at some point, and as a designer, it's got to be hard for you to stand by some, like a boucle, for example. I'm not saying you're in love with boucle, but I'm just using that as an example.
I do love boucle, actually.
Okay, good.
I have no problem with it. And I think it's actually, you know, it being a texture makes it kind of, you know, it's a texture is... I think textures are wonderful, and I don't think boucle is one of those textures that is so out there and in your face that when it's out, I can understand just being tired of using it as a designer, but honestly, I still love boucle, and I think it's wonderful, and it's not so in your face that it's like, you know, say a macrame wall hanging that, you know, really is, you know, a textural thing, but one that's kind of had its day. Although it is making a comeback. So.
It is. Check Etsy. Macrame is making a huge comeback.
It is. I know. Yes. Maybe that's not the best analogy because it is coming back. But I've seen, you know, I do think texturally, okay, so glazed chintz, that's not a texture, but it is a fabric trend that was huge, you know, for a period of time. I'm probably dating myself by mentioning it. Some of the millennials might not know the glazed chintz craze, but it was big, but it was also very big and impactful visually. The huge florals, the glazing, where I think it's like boucle is much more soft spoken. So I'm still all for boucle.
Yeah, well, and it goes back to the idea of the white kitchen, which, by the way, wanted to look at some of your projects. And this is something that started for me during the pandemic, really in earnest, when I started doing episodes of the showroom, you know, live episodes via Zoom and talking to designers and actually walking through a lot of their projects. So I wanted to walk through some of your projects that I saw online. And I wanted to start with the Pacific Heights residence. And by the way, if you want to go online and so you can watch, look at it with me, I don't know when you did this project, but for those following along, if you want to follow along as well, go to the show notes and you can click on the link to McCaffrey Design Group and you can follow along some of these projects with us because I have found that this is an absolutely remarkable way of getting inside the mind of creatives. Like, it's one thing to talk about it, and that's why I love doing the podcast, but it's another thing to see it and talk about it at the same time so that you can really see how it happens. And I chose this one specifically because this is an absolutely gorgeous white kitchen. The hero image here is this stunningly beautiful white kitchen. Talk to me about this space. And what I love so much about it, just to sort of preface it, is you did a couple of things here that I absolutely love. There is a color palette that finds its way from the runners to the seating in the eat-in dining area into the cushions of the chairs. There is a, you know, beautiful window coverings. The drapery is beautiful. But it also, there's this view to the outside, which clearly you took advantage of when putting this all together. And I'm not trying to pretend I'm the designer on this, but just things that I noticed right away are amazing. And then you look at, you know, I mean, look, a home, a residence is a machine to serve those who live there. And this is not an overly huge space, but the functionality of it, I can't find, and I look, by the way, I look for wasted space. I really do. Because sometimes wasted negative space is a good thing. But you've used everything here and it's seamless. Talk to me about this kitchen.
This that whole space is marvelous. And the whole family that resides in this home is just marvelous. And they have, I believe, four children, if I'm counting correctly, and very busy lifestyles. But it's all about family and gathering. And so the seamlessness, I'm so glad that you noticed it, because it was really important to get this family room space, which is adjacent to the dining space, which is adjacent to the kitchen. It all just works super, super well. The white kitchen, it's important because this client, as you can tell by looking at the project, loves color. They love color. They love vibrancy. Vibrancy is such a perfect word to describe who they are as people and as a family. So, and she really loves to take risks. So very gutsy and bold with color. So we wanted the kitchen to be like a wonderful, calm canvas. Again, there's that example of keeping some of these permanent materials timeless, classic. You know, we can swap out the drapery. We can swap out, you know, the seat fabric on the dining chairs. A lot of those things can be swapped out in time if she wants to change course without changing a lot of like the more permanent expensive materials. So that kitchen's going to look great for many years to come. And the drapery can change, the colors can change, but it acts as a wonderful canvas. And there's a lot of activity that happens around that kitchen island, around the dining table. The client always sets up wonderful centerpieces at the dining table, depending on what season it is. If it's Easter, she has some really wonderful whimsical things out there. Christmas or Halloween, that table is kind of a stage, if you will, to set all sorts of wonderful things. There's always jars of candy out on the island. It's just a marvelous space. So kitchen, keeping it clean, white, super functional, allows it to embrace all the other colors that are in those spaces, the bright colored rug, the bright artwork, the yellow drapery. All of those items are like paint on a canvas. So that was our approach to this space. We didn't want the kitchen to compete in any way with some of the other fun stuff going on. And we wanted the kitchen to stand the test of time.
So by the way, I lost count on the number of colors in this residence. And I think it's fantastic. The first thing I want to point out, though, is the kitchen leading into the open space, the common area with the kitchen, it's a really interesting space. And you had a choice here, right? You could have gone ultra large kitchen, right? With a secondary scullery, butler's pantry. I mean, there's enough room here. But you went with a kitchen and an eat-in, and I don't mean you personally. I mean, obviously the client has, but this space is so interesting because you have an open concept to this, but it's not a full open home concept like a mid-century modern.
Right.
It's a sectioned off, but you've got pretty much everything that you want there. I think that's really interesting, and it's very unique because you also had a chance to incorporate so many different colors as well as different types of art. And while there's different colors, the yellow from the drapery makes its way into the other side. I just think it was masterfully done how the colors just so seamlessly blend from one side of the room into the other. And it's multifunctional as well. Was this a challenge for you?
Not really. We love playing with color. I've been playing with color all my life. Is it a puzzle? Yes, it's a bit of a puzzle, but it's a fun puzzle. And I think the trick is, you know, you want to carry colors throughout the room. You want your eye to hop from color to color to color and see a little bit of repetition, but not too much, and not be too stringent about the matching either, because matching can be kind of boring. Your eye and your brain kind of tunes out. So you have a little bit of playing with complementary colors. You have a little bit of sort of magic happening with the combination of the colors that you choose, and maybe a little unpredictability is a really good thing. And I think in this space, we had a little bit of unpredictability. Yes, we can have coral, lilac, yellow, and orange all in the same space. And it really does work. You just have to pick the right tones and make sure that they all work as a symphony together. So, and you know, luckily the client was super into taking these risks and delving deep. We're actually doing a new sofa for that space, and it's actually going to be in a deep sort of plum burgundy color, which is actually another risk that, you know, we were all for, and the client was all for, and I think it's going to look great. So we might have to photograph that room again.
I love that. By the way, it's so funny. When I talk about open spaces and hearing the dog bark while you're talking, I bring it up only because, you know what I need to do? I need to do a blooper reel of all of the, she scares the crap out of me. probably once every five videos. I gotta go back.
I'm a total dog person myself. So I've got one. And between you and me too, I also have a construction crew in the kitchen right now. So,
but it reminded me of something that I wanted to ask you about. So thank you, Rosie. I'm thankful for that.
Thank you, Rosie.
When it comes to, especially in open spaces and noise baffling and that sort of thing, one of the things that I noticed, you made a choice. I don't know if it was the client's choice, your choice, but I'm curious. In the kitchen leading into the seating area of that space, there is no rug under the table. In the dining room, which I want to talk about too next, there is no rug under the table. I have found that there's a war waging. There are designers, clients who say you always have to have, and by always, I mean a little hyperbole, but it's you put a rug under the table. And then there are others who say that was kind of a traditional element. And we just don't do that anymore for cleanliness, for crumbs, for Legos, you know, whatever it happens to be. What's your take on that? And clearly there was a philosophical approach to this because you have two tables, two chairs, no rugs. And I'm curious your take on that.
Well, you know, they had a lot of little children. And so there was a very conscious decision of keeping those floors clean and easy to clean. So in that regard, with that house at that particular time in their lives, we thought no rugs under the dining table. That just it. And also there's a little bit of, especially with the kitchen dining, that table divides the kitchen from the family room, and the family room does have a very impactful rug from Neva. It's really beautiful, and we really wanted all attention on that rug. We didn't want to have a rug right next to it that would compete at all, but mostly it was about functionality and making sure that the kids could dine freely, make a mess, and that the husband and wife wouldn't be worried all the time. The whole house was approached in this way. So like the living room and the formal dining room also had to be kid friendly. So they had to be elegant, but also very functional. And so that nobody would have to worry, they could just have fun with the kids. You know, everybody could use the space freely. Nobody would have to be shooed out of the room because they were afraid that the furniture was too precious. So that was big, you know, very family friendly house. So no rugs under the dining tables there. And you know, I take it situation by situation. Sometimes clients, having a rug under the dining table, it's a wonderful thing, and it's noise dampening. But I think the family dynamic has to be right. You know, if there's little kiddos, I'd say, let's wait on the rug until they're grown up.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. So into the dining room. Okay. I love this space. Absolutely love it. And I want to know everything, but a couple of things. The color palette. It's so interesting how many different color palettes and how many different changes of direction in this one room alone. So between the fabric on the chairs, the material, the wallpaper, oh my gosh, that wallpaper. And we're going to get to wallpaper in this project. The chandelier, the mirror, the sconces. And then I wanted to ask you to take me into another choice you made. And that was to put the wet bar, I'm assuming it's a wet bar, it's a bar, behind a hidden door, of which you open the door and there is this shocking orange. Why hide the bar? Is it because of the kids? And what was originally there? Was it a closet? Take me through this space, because I absolutely love it.
Oh, gosh. There is so much fun going on. First off, the walls in the dining room were actually hand-painted by
Obis.
Yeah, we loved, you know, all of the classic DeGournays, but we wanted something that was a little more personal. And so we had a super talented decorative painter, Catherine Jacobus, come in, and she painted all of those walls by hand. Just did a beautiful job. And so there's a wonderful personal touch to the paintings on that wall. Again, more surprises with the color. Yeah, we definitely wanted a pop on the chairs with that sort of magenta or fuchsia color. Just again, a little, it's all about surprises and delightful surprises. So keeping things fun loving, non-predictable, and just a little the lights here and there. So same thing with the hidden bar. We wanted something that was built in that didn't disturb the wonderful symmetry of the room. So the bar was put in there again, you know, this transition of family time with the kiddos And then it's really sophisticated entertaining for the adults, the parents, and their friends. There was a good amount of attention paid to having the more casual family room, kitchen dining side of the house, and then just down the hall, a bit more of a space where the adults can say, okay, let's bring our friends into this more impactful, more sophisticated series of spaces, which would be the living room and the dining room. So for the dining room, again, yeah, I love that unexpected pop. It's the Andy Warhol flowers wallpaper from Flavor Paper, which is just marvelous. And again, yeah, we just wanted that surprise. You open the door and it's like confetti goes off. So, and that really, truly, I have to say, it's the client, that was all her. And she just, again, she loves surprises. She loves delightful little things like that, and is very, very willing to take great risks. And that was one element that I just thought was amazing. I loved that bar.
Yeah, I love that too. Just out of curiosity, what was that space originally? Do you remember?
That house was... it was sort of a gut remodel. And so I can't recall exactly what was there before.
No, specifically the room where the bar is. Here's the thing. I love when spaces are reconfigured to serve another purpose in a mm-hmm. seamless, meaningful way. This to me seems like it was an entry closet, or it was a phone niche, or it was, you know, something else that was converted into this. I don't know, or maybe it wasn't. I don't know. It just looks really interesting.
I think it was carved away. It is almost like a foyer. As you go up the stairs, it is a foyer. And I think it was kind of carved out in the plans to create a dining room where there wasn't really one. Mm. So it is somewhat open to the hall. Along the length of the dining room. So it is a very interesting space. And I wish I could recall what it was prior to the remodel, but I think that was a very skillful move from the architect to design that space in there and create a formal dining room where there wasn't one originally.
Yeah. And then moving from there, we go from the light, bright side of the house into the dark and moody side of the house, which, you know, one of the things that I think is just so great about this project, and I could spend all day talking about this, we might actually, is there's a philosophical approach that I see in your work that blends and bends from the symmetrical to the asymmetrical. And you do it on different wings of the house, it appears, and you also do it within different sides of the same room. So we're in this living room where you have a fireplace on one side juxtaposed to the bay window. I think it's a bay window on the other side. And you have one side where the fireplace is extremely symmetrical. Then the other side where the sofa is somewhat, but not totally symmetrical. And it's interesting how there's a yin and yang to this particular space. Walk me through the idea.
So yeah, there were some challenges with the room and how we wanted it to function, because it was a rather long room. And so we wanted to divide up the space that would suit social gatherings for sure. Provided plenty of seating, but also provided a bit of drama, and also, you know, how do we fill this room so it is really useful and we can maximize the seating as much as possible. So there is even like a Gustavian daybed further back in the room too, which I don't think shows in the photographs, but so there was a lot of seating in there. And again, we just wanted a bit of variety and playing with the length of the room, allowed us to stretch a little bit. You know, some slightly more petite sculptural chairs closer to the fireplace have a little bit more of an airiness to them. So your eye can still flow directly to the fireplace, to those wonderful Fornacetti style cabinets to either side of the fireplace. We still wanted to be able to see those and not block the room too much, but make the room feel inviting, you know, really pull people into the seating arrangement rather than having more of like a blockade that you have to go through, any chairs that you have to weave through. We wanted the kids to run down the hall and jump on the sofa, or for the mother and father to usher their friends from the dining table into this living room to sit and have a cocktail at the end of the evening. So that was really the reasoning behind, you know, having a bit more of like the heavier arm chairs further back in the room, the lighter chairs a little bit more forward towards the fireplace, because there were two distinct focal points to that room, one being the bay window and the curved sofa, and the other one being the fireplace. So we wanted the furnishings to work with those two focal points in mind.
Gosh, I love that. And then the last element to this space that I wanted to talk to you about is two different, and what I always say that this is the last thing and it never is, so just know that. But there are two bathrooms featured on the website about for this project. And the dichotomy between the two is just so stunning to me. And I want to talk to you about this, and I want you to walk me through it, because obviously, see, I say obviously, and that's probably a mistake. I shouldn't say obviously, but I'm going to assume that when you have a beetle wallpaper, that's probably the kids' bathroom. Yes. And then when you have just this incredibly sophisticated bathroom, and I'm going to make some assumptions here, because the glass goes all the way to the ceiling, I'm going to assume there's steam.
Yes.
Talk me through these two bathrooms, the philosophy behind each individually and together, because if I looked at these, I could say, as somebody who is just for no other reason, oh, I get it, this is the same house, but it's a very, very different approach to two very similar rooms.
Yes, yes, very different and almost polarly arranged within the house. So the master bath is up on the tippy top floor, and again, focus on serenity, luxury, timelessness. Yes, it is white, you know, but again, timelessness. You know, something that doesn't need to get ripped out for 20 years. It still looks as good as the day it was installed. So a classic modern timelessness to it. It's the focus of the master, keeping it sophisticated, high functioning, but yet luxurious and restful. The beetle wallpaper is a kid's bathroom that's off of the playroom down at the very bottom floor of the house. And this is a very casual, very fun space that serves a ton of purposes. So the playroom, which is the one that has a really fun multicolored rug, is just off of this bathroom. So this was a space that, again, lots of fun activities were going to be happening. Relatives would be staying in this room. Kids would be playing, you know, games and puzzles, watching movies on a giant sectional down there. So for that bathroom, we wanted it to be a bit of a fun little surprise. And the beetle wallpaper our client saw, and she just said, yes, I have to have it. And, you know, all the colors that are on there and just the gutsiness, again, is shown that the client's willing to take risks and choose things that are unexpected. She's a big fan of butterflies, and there's a lot of butterfly elements around the house. So we thought the beetle would be kind of a fun mix with all the butterfly themed elements in the house as well. So yeah, that was a fun one. Uh-oh, I can't hear you.
Sorry, I have
Oh,
to. I know Rosie is ready to go bark at something again, so I'm trying to. So with the steam, with the master bathroom, I have said this for a while that, the nature of spaces are changing, and if you want a luxury space, it really has to have steam. It's just something like, well, of course it has a sink. Well, of course it has a toilet. That's part of what bathrooms have. Then you up the level a little bit, and you have lighting on either side of the mirror. You have additional elements there. Of course you have steam, because that's what a modern luxury bathroom looks like. I just think it's, and I draw a correlation between that. See, I told you this was not going to be the last thing. I draw a correlation between that, and I'm making another assumption again. So if I'm wrong on this, let me know. But I'm trying to figure out where this kitchenette is. Is it part of the master, or is it another space?
The kitchenette with the
Yeah.
yellow oven, that
Yeah.
is part of that playroom that I was just telling you about with the really fun rug. And that's, so it has a little kitchenette. This is a giant space at the bottom of the house, and it wears so many hats that I can't even begin to tell you. I don't even know what we should call that room, but it's kind of like a rumpus room. It's again, where all the kids hang out, but it's also where the relatives stay, the mother and father, the parents of the husband and wife will stay down there sometimes. Kids have slumber parties, movie watching, and so yeah, that little kitchenette is actually very functional because it can turn into a little in-law unit.
Yeah, so it's crazy. So by the way, what size oven is that?
I think it's like a 30-incher or a 30
I'm not
inch.
gonna hold you to it, but it just the kitchenette is so, it's so dainty. It's a yellow, it's an ovenette. I mean, it's really, it's a, and is there refrigeration in there as well?
Yes, there is.
Built in?
There is. Yeah, just a little mini
Ah,
fridge.
oh, I love that. I think that that is just the greatest use of space. Okay, this is my last question for you about this project. So downstairs, you have crown molding around the whole space. And I'm going to assume, because I can't really tell, but I'm going to assume that in the living room, where the darker one, you still have the crown molding, but instead of the white crown molding from the rest of the house, you went with the darker, because the whole room is dark. But then you get into the stairwell, and in the stairway there is no crown molding. It doesn't, or maybe there is. But then you get into the bedrooms and the bathrooms, and I can't tell if there is or isn't. Did you carry it through? And if you didn't carry it through to every room, what's the idea behind that? Or did you carry it through to every room?
We weren't super involved with the crown molding. That would be Stephen Sutro's touch there. So we
Okay.
didn't weigh in too much on that.
Okay. I really do love this project. I think it's fantastic. I'm a little bummed because it wasn't your purview, obviously, but I would love to see what the surrounding footprint looks like too, because outside the kitchen, you see how, that use of outdoor space is just fantastic. And it doesn't look like it's that big.
No, it's not terribly big, and there's actually it's the backside of the house, so it faces a lot of other houses. And what we did back there is also the playroom, or the rumpus room, as I like to call it, downstairs, opens up and actually has a fair amount of outdoor space that also faces sort of the backsides of other homes. But what we did is we built a green wall. We built a wall and actually covered it in faux boxwood. So it looks like a giant three-story tall boxwood hedge. And then, the kitchen just kind of pops up a little bit above that. And then you get to see a little peek sort of beyond that. But there's not a ton of space off the kitchen. It's just really a small deck. But it's more inviting because of that boxwood hedge. It kind of plays in, it gives you a little bit more of that natural feel out that window. It's fun.
It is fun. And while we're out of time, the one thing I will say, and I don't do this very often, but if you're listening and you want an extra homework assignment, because our homework is fun, I would say go to McCaffreyDesignGroup.com, go to the projects page, listen to the walkthrough of the Pacific Heights residents. And maybe, Katie, maybe you and I reconnect on this, because you have the absolute flip side of the same coin in the Great Grattan residence.
Grattan, yes.
Grattan. Yes. It is the antithesis of the project that we just walked through.
Yes.
But you can see the through lines. You can see the fingerprint as a creative that you used to incorporate this. There are a lot of the same philosophies, the same ideas, but it is a completely different project.
We like to be chameleons, you know. Again,
love that.
That's the client coming through. You know, what are the client's needs, desires, and you know, we can design anything. So we want to tailor the spaces to them, to the environment, to the architecture. All of those things come into play, and I think yeah, you can definitely see it with the Grattan residence. That's a beautiful, beautiful home.
Yeah, I love it, Katie. This was so much fun. This was amazing. I really appreciate the time, and I loved our chat. This was great. Thank you.
It was so much fun, Josh. It was such a pleasure getting to know you and spending time with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Design Hardware's newly remodeled showroom is where you will find a gallery-style space with a thoughtful display of products, purposefully positioned to allow unbridled exploration and discovery. High-end faucets, luxury tile, natural stone, wood floors, and bespoke hardware selections are presented in a holistic manner, strategically arranged to stimulate creativity and transition your vision from the conceptual stage to a fully realized space. Conveniently located, free parking available. Stop by to find your inspiration, collect samples, get expert advice, and tackle everything on your shopping list all in one place. Visit them online at designhardware.com or in the real world, 6053 West 3rd Street in Los Angeles.
Thank you, Katie. Loved our chat. I really do love these conversations. I love sharing these stories with you. And to be honest with you, selfishly, I love hearing the stories myself. It's inspiring. It's what I love to do. And again, I love sharing these with you. Please continue to email me with your guest and show suggestions. I love them. Some of them are incredibly entertaining. Some of them are on point. All of them are welcome. So thank you. convobydesign@outlook.com. And reach out to us via Instagram at convobydesign with an X. Thank you to Convo by Design partner sponsors, Thermosol, TimberTech, Pacific Sales, Monogram, and Design Hardware. You guys are amazing. These are amazing partner sponsors. They support the design community all the time in an unending way. And so I ask you to support them as well. They're amazing. And I, again, thank you for your support. For links to their websites and products, check the show notes. For more stories like these from the design community, please make sure you are subscribing to the podcast so you receive new episodes automatically when they're published. That way, you never miss a single episode of Convo by Design, which, by the way, is we're creeping up on episode 500. Can you believe that? I can't. It's amazing. And it's because of you, because you listen, because you subscribe, because you come out to the events, because you participate in the show. And again, for that, I thank you. Convo by Design, in case you didn't know, is available everywhere you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks for listening. Until next week, be well, take care, and take today first.